This is Microbe Talk, the podcast from the Microbiology Society. Now, if you are subscribed to our YouTube channel, you might have seen our newest video called Ask a Microbiologist Vaccines. In this video, virologists Dr. John Tregoning, Dr. Gayatri Ramachandran, and Professor Nicholas Stonehouse answer some of the most Googled questions about vaccines. Today on the podcast, we will be hearing a bit more from John and Nick with the answers to some more questions that we didn't include in the video. I would just like to take a moment to say a massive thank you to Gayatri, who very kindly took some time out of her maternity leave to talk about childhood immunizations for the video. So now I'm going to hand over to Matt. Stay tuned for some more vaccine questions answered.
Are vaccines safe?
Vaccines are one of the most important medical interventions in improving human health. Without vaccines, many of us wouldn't actually be here. So antibiotics, vaccination, clean water, those are three of the most important things for human health. So are they safe? On the whole, yes. There will always be people who have adverse reaction, sometimes to the active ingredient in a vaccine, sometimes to some of the preservatives in vaccines. But on the whole, these events are very, very, very small in number. And so therefore, yes, vaccines are safe. And in my opinion, the use of vaccines far outweighs any risk. So benefits outweigh the risk.
So are there different types of vaccine?
Yes, there's lots of different types of vaccines. So we can sort of group them by the way they're manufactured or the type of infection that they're trying to protect against. So we have some that are based on a weakened version of a virus or a bacteria, and these are called attenuated vaccines. There are some where you just take a single component, a protein from the virus, and express it, and you purify that out, and they're called protein vaccines. The Novavax vaccine, for example, is a protein vaccine. There are other vaccines where you're using one virus to deliver the code of another virus, and that gives you the protection. And these are known as viral vectored vaccines. And for example, the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine is one of those. And finally, there is a family of vaccines which are based on genes only. So these are these mRNA vaccines that the Pfizer, BioNTech, or the Moderna vaccines are based. And this is where they've taken a single gene from the virus, and they've isolated it, and they can inject it into people's arms, and your arm will basically make a single bit of the virus in your body, and your immune system recognizes that and protects you against it. Those are the sort of major groups of vaccines that we have.
How are vaccines tested?
So before any vaccines are tested on people, they're always tested on animals for safety and for efficacy. But there are many stages to a clinical trial. First of all, it's important to make sure that vaccines are safe, and this is done with a small number of people. Then you start to look at whether there's any benefit to the vaccine. So do the vaccines produce any antibody responses or any other T cell responses, for example? And then later parts in the trial, you look at, in a situation where you've got a lot of the pathogen around, is someone who's vaccinated better off than someone who isn't? So is there a reduced chance of somebody who's vaccinated getting the disease? So do they actually protect against the disease?
And who are they tested on?
So it's going to change as the vaccine development programme moves through. So the first, once a vaccine's been demonstrated to be safe, and that's often using animal models, it'll then go into a small, what's described as a phase one clinical trial. And this is performed on healthy adult volunteers. Well, the main readout from those safety trials is to make sure the vaccines are safe in people. Once it's been demonstrated, it will then move into a larger, what's known as an efficacy study. And that will probably initially again be done in healthy adult volunteers. But then they may move it more into kind of different groups. So that may be people over 65 or children, depending on where the vaccine's actually going to be targeted in the end.
So what do vaccines protect against?
What don't they protect against? We've actually got vaccines for a huge number of different diseases. We have vaccines for rotavirus, Streptococcus pneumoniae, diphtheria, hepatitis B, hepatitis A, Haemophilus influenzae B, polio, tetanus, whooping cough, measles, mumps, rubella, human papillomavirus, influenza, shingles, COVID, smallpox, meningitis, malaria, TB, yellow fever, and dengue. And I've almost certainly forgotten some of them. But there's a huge number of diseases that we don't get generally in the population because of these vaccines.
How are vaccines administered?
So the administration of a vaccine really depends on the vaccine itself. So a lot of vaccines now are administered by injection. And this, I think, is one of the reasons why a lot of people don't like vaccines, is that inherent fear and worry about needles. A few vaccines are still are administered differently. So the flu vaccine, for example, for children is an intranasal vaccine. The original polio vaccine, which is not very widely used anymore, was an oral vaccine. But these are live vaccines. There aren't a lot of live vaccines that we currently use, but these can be administered differently. Going forward, what there's a lot of work going on is about intradermal delivery. So this is using technology such as nanopatches, which are small microneedles, sort of a little bit like a nicotine patch. And that would be the way you deliver your vaccine. And I think there'd be a lot more compliance if you were literally sort of putting a bit of a plaster on your arm rather than necessarily having a needle. So if this pans out, it will be both beneficial for delivery and induction of immune response.
So why are some people hesitant about vaccines?
Yeah, I think one of the challenges with vaccines is that you're taking someone who is a perfectly healthy individual, you've got nothing wrong with you whatsoever, and you're asking that person to have a needle stuck in their arm for potentially questionable benefit. You know, do I really need this? Is it going to be a benefit to me? Whereas most other medical procedures, there's something wrong with you, and therefore you have a needle stuck in your arm.
Yes.
So anything preventative, I think, is always going to be challenging and a harder sell.
How do vaccines work?
So vaccines work by training the immune system. Your immune system is very clever at recognising infections and then producing a memory against them so that if you get re-exposed to the same thing, you fight it off much quicker. And what a vaccine does is it gives you that memory without ever getting sick in the first place. So they train up your immune system. They will train up two parts of the immune system. There is a part called the antibodies, and these are chemicals in your blood that can bind a virus and stop it ever infecting you. And they can train up things called T cells, which recognize infected cells and clear the virus out of them. So you train up both parts of that, and you get a memory so that when you see the virus for real, you can kill it without it ever infecting you.
Who do vaccines protect?
So vaccines, most importantly, protect whoever's vaccinated with them. So you have to receive the vaccine in order to be protected by the vaccine. But there is a bonus feature of vaccination, which is that you can actually protect unvaccinated populations if you get the vaccine coverage high enough. So one of the, and this is referred to as herd immunity relating to the vaccines. We see this with a vaccine against a disease called Streptococcus pneumoniae, where they give a lot of vaccination to children and toddlers, and it protects the children and toddlers, but actually it stops the children giving the infection to their grandparents. And so you get twice as much protection for one dose of vaccine in that way. So they mainly protect those vaccinated, but they can have a broader societal benefit as well.
Why do vaccines not work all of the time?
I think nothing in life is perfect. It would be wonderful if we had, you know, drugs that were fantastic to cure everything, could work for everybody and worked all the time. Nothing will give you perfect protection. What you hope is that you get enough people vaccinated so that overall herd immunity can help deal with the people who maybe aren't so well protected. Vaccination's a team effort. It's not just about protecting yourself. It's about protecting the community, your family, those around you.
Why do some vaccines take longer to develop than others?
So there's a number of reasons for this. There are some vaccines or some viruses, some pathogens to which the scientific challenges are very, very hard. So trying to identify what it is that would protect you against the infection is very difficult. This is why we don't have an HIV vaccine, for example, because the virus is a particularly tricky pathogen and it's hard to work out how you can stop it in its tracks. But other things may take time because of the financial investment needed to make the vaccine at each step. To make sure the product's safe, to make sure it's effective, takes time and it takes money. And the investment normally only happens once each checkpoint has been passed. So once it's known it's safe, they'll invest more money. Once it's known it's effective, then more money can be invested. So it's normally a kind of a longer stepwise process.
So why do some vaccines need to be kept cold?
So some of the components in a vaccine just aren't very stable. So, you know, we know that a lot of our basic foodstuffs don't store forever if they're not kept cold or indeed frozen in some cases. So because a lot of vaccines can be just protein based, just like some of our foodstuffs, they do need to be kept cold. And it is a challenge, especially when you think about distributing vaccines worldwide, maintaining that cold chain. The messenger RNA vaccines, the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine, because it is RNA-based, RNA is very, very fragile, very labile, and so it degrades very, very readily. Anybody who's worked with RNA knows that as soon as you're out of a minus 80 freezer, that RNA is very vulnerable.
And why is it that RNA degrades faster than, say, DNA? Is it because of the structure?
No, it's because of the different chemical makeup of RNA versus DNA. So so RNA, you've got ribonucleic acid, DNA deoxyribonucleic acid. And so that difference is on the sugar and means that what happens for RNA is that you get what's called a nucleophilic attack of the phosphate backbone. And so almost the RNA attacks itself, if you like. And there are enzymes which can catalyse that reaction, and they're everywhere. We have them all over our hands. We have them in our cells. So basically, RNA is considered a molecule that you don't want to hang around a lot. Because it's biologically a messenger. You want to make it and use it and degrade it. You don't want it hanging around all the time, or it's associated with pathogen in some cases, which is another sort of signal for bad. So generally, yeah, RNA is what we call very labile, and there's a good reason why biologically it's labile.
And finally, do vaccines last forever?
So that's a really interesting question. The length of the vaccine response may vary with different vaccines, and it may vary with how much virus or the thing they're fighting is available in the environment. We know that the yellow fever vaccine can last for an extremely long time. So you can have a single shot of yellow fever virus vaccine and be protected for the rest of your life. The same for, say, hepatitis A virus. But other ones you may lose the immune response over time, and this is why you might need a booster response. You may see this, for example, in the context of children getting a preschool booster with MMR. So children get their MMR vaccines in the first year of life, but they often get one as they turn nursery age and get about, you know, age of five before they go to school as well. And that's just to boost what might be waning immunity.
Thanks so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed the episode. A huge thanks to John and Nick for helping us out with these questions. Check out the links in the podcast description below to find out more about vaccines. And don't forget to check out the full video on our YouTube channel.